Had to park, which is not so easy to do around here. Just want to find the pusik beforehand. Okay. So, Rabbi Sai, this is the way it was described to me, because I didn't get to speak to our center. You should have a refuah shleima. And my words this evening are L'zeich Nishmas Rav Gavriel ben Rav Tzvezel, whose yahrzeit is today. And a refuah shleima for the Rosh Yeshiva. So, but the way I understand it is that this is supposed to be the end of the Zman insights. I don't like to say shmooze. Sounds too much like Musa. Yeah. But when you ask people what their goal is, so people tell you, you know, well, yeah, I want to be a good person. I want to have a good life. I want to have a good marriage. I want to have good kids. And then when you say to them, what is a good person? Suddenly they get stuck. You know, that's someone who doesn't kill, doesn't steal. That's a person in a coma. You know what I mean? It's not a person who's a good person, you know. What's a good marriage? You know, where it's good, you know. Well, how do you define it? I want a good kid. What's a good kid? Define what's a good kid, you know. And of course, as the Masil Sharm says right at the beginning, the same thing is true with life. I want to have a meaningful life. What's a meaningful life? Why is it when you ask so many people later in life whether they lived a meaningful life, they have difficulty answering the question? You know, I told the story here years ago. I don't know how many people are still here from years ago, but I see a few faces. But, you know, but I was talking to a group of guys once who were already dating. And I said, why should you get married? They all gave bad answers. I won't go through them now. All bad answers. I shrugged them all. So a guy says, okay, so why should you get married? I said, I'll tell you, but isn't it interesting that you just by pure luck, you didn't find anybody yet. So you came to this vod. Otherwise, you'd get married, and when I'd ask you why you got married, you'd have absolutely no answer to the question. I said, but don't feel bad. Talk to people who've been married for 10 years. They can't give you an answer. You know, why should you get married? And what's a meaningful life? What is it all about? So before you so do something, sof ma'asev ma'achshav etchila, before you set out, you got to know where you're going. You got to have a roadmap, and you have to have a plan. Sil Shimon Perek Gimel says that this world is like a garden maze. Anyone know how you cheat at a maze? Of course you do. Everyone knows how to cheat at everything, yeah? The way you cheat at a maze is you go to the end, and you work your way backwards. That's how you cheat at life, yeah? Figure out where you want to be at the end of your life and work your way backwards. So we're not going to deal with anything that global right now. Right now, all we're doing is going into your, what they call Bein Hazmanim. I prefer that term to Chofesh. I had a friend of mine who was in Mishkan Atari many years ago, and the famous Magid of Yerushalayim, Shadron, was speaking. And he only remembers one line that he said. Chofesh? Maze Chofesh? Yehudi ain lo Chofesh. They all stayed for Bein Hazmanim an extra 2 weeks. It was a beautiful thing. Anyway, but free? Who freedom, you know, what does that mean, free? Well, we have a term for that, you know, it's called parik ol, but that's not what we're talking about, you know. So I prefer Bein Hazmanim. Bein Hazmanim is a different thing. You know, there's no question that people need time to recover. And I have to tell you, though, that this Bein Hazmanim is different from every other Bein Hazmanim. Because the two other Bein Hazmanims that exist in the yeshivisha calendar is, of course, in Nisan and Tishrei. And both of those times, you don't say Tachlin. There's something of a simcha. It doesn't seem like it's Bein Hazmanim when you have to say Tachlin, right? But the truth of the matter is that it's a different type of a Bein Hazmanim. I once heard Rabbi Leff explain it, that it takes you 3 weeks from Shavuos V'Tammuz to Tisha B'Av to end up on the floor. And then it takes you 3 more weeks to sit on the floor, from Tisha B'Av till Rosh Chodesh Elul. Then we blow a shofar and it says, wake up. Wake up, get up, let's start doing something. Let's make something of our life. But these are 3 weeks where it just ends. You know, there's no downtime. When I lost my father, so you go through a process. Yeah, the Levi was going to be on Sunday morning. I got up in the morning, I set my alarm clock like I do every morning. I got up, and then I realized, what am I getting up for? I can't go to shul. I can't daven. Can't put on tefillin. If I make a bracha, I'm not supposed to. If you do, you can't answer ame. It's nothing. You're an one. You're not an avelis yet. You're just nothing. You know? So, okay. So, you're an onen, and then you go from there to being in shiva. You come back from the kfura, sit on the floor, sit on the floor for a week. You're ripped clothing. You don't shower. You don't greet. You know? Then you go into shloshim, and then you go into the rest of the year, and then once a year you remember it. But there's a chance to pull out of it. Tisha B'Av comes, bam, that's it. You know, sit on the floor, burn down the base of Mikdash, and get up the next day, turn on the music, go swimming, you know, it's all over. It's just over. So the emes is, that's really Benazmanim. Benazmanim is really recovery time. We don't even realize it. Those 3 weeks to Rosh Chodesh Elul are a time where we just sit on the floor and feel sorry for ourselves. We don't realize it. We don't realize it. I had a friend of mine, Yechezkel Goldberg. I knew him when he was a kid. And he became a therapist. He was a columnist in the Jewish press. And one day he was on a bus and an Arab blew himself up and killed my friend Yechezkel. The youngest kid was under a year. I went to pay a shivakul. And there was a little kid there, 2, 3 years old. I forgot how old he was. And he was very excited. Someone bought him a new plane. He was playing with his little plane. He was running around. He had no idea what was going on. That's what we're like with the Korban. We don't even know what we missed. We don't understand that anything even happened. But Lemaisa, there should be a little pang at least during those 3 weeks. 3 weeks to get to the Korban. 3 weeks at least to mull it over. So what I want to do with the time we have remaining is just give you something to mull over. Because the word of Tisha B'Av is clearly Eicha. Eicha. How could it be? How could it be? And the Chazal tell us that three people use the Lashon Eicha. Yirmiyahu, as we know very well in Megillas Eicha. Eicha Yashva Vadad. How could it be Yerushalayim, the city that was the princess, that was the greatest of all the cities, how could it be Yashva Vadad? Empty of people. How could this be Yerushalayim? Imagine you come to Yerushalayim and there's like nothing. No people, just ruins, just everything empty. We don't appreciate that today because we don't know what a city is. We don't know what Yerushalayim was. So the Medrash says that the word ir, which refers specifically to Yerushalayim, is from the same Lashon of orer that we say when we blow shofar. Wake you up. Came to Yerushalayim and it woke you up. You lived a different existence. It changed you. There was the dynamism of the town. How could it be, says Yirmiyahu, that it sits empty and forlorn? So there's another Eicha, and that's the Eicha of Yishayahu that we read not this Shabbos, next Shabbos, in Parshas Chazon. Eicha ha-yisal le-zayna. We read it with the Eicha Trap. How could it be it was like a Zayna? Kirya ne'emana, the city that was so faithful. Malaysi mishpat tzedek yalin ba. It was a city that was filled with justice. Our honesty stayed there. Ve'atom ratzchim, and now they're murderers. Kas v'chahal sigim, they would mix cheap metals into the silver. Soveich mahu b'mayim. They'd mix water into the wine. Sarayich sarim v'chavrei ganavim. Your officers are thieves. Kulo ohev shochat. They all love bribery. Rodev shalmonim. Yosem lo yishpat. They don't judge for the yosem. And they don't bring the argument, the problems of the almana. They don't worry about it. Ask Yishayahu, how could it be? Yerushalayim was the greatest city. Nekiyei Adas for Yerushalayim is the lashon of the Gemara. Nekiyei Adas. Yerushalayim was a place where the Beis HaMikdash stood. We don't understand what that means. I'll talk about the second Beis HaMikdash for a second, because the first Beis HaMikdash is even more distant. You know, they point out that World War I started on Tisha B'Av. So people say, yeah, but the real Holocaust is World War II. This is right, but every historian will tell you that the reason it's called World War II is because it was just a hemshach of World War I. It just continued the war. And the Churban Bayis Sheni is just a continuation of Churban Bayis Rishon. What we lost in Churban Bayis Rishon, we never got back with Churban Bayis Sheni. But let's at least talk about Churban Bayis Sheni. When you come to the Kaisel today, and you stand on the platform, you're in midair. There's as much underground as there is above. This was a gigantic fortress. And the Beis HaMikdash that stood on that mountain is twice as high as that dome that's on it now. And there was a cloud hanging above it, and throngs of people coming. And you saw the Kohanim. If you got there early enough, take the Trumas Hadeshen and put it by the side of the Mizbeach, and it disappeared. You watch them pull out the parts from the bird that you weren't allowed to bring in the korban and drop it, and it disappeared. You saw Nisim v'Niflos. It was a place outside of Yerushalayim where people would stay before you walked in, because you don't walk into Yerushalayim. You have to stop and clear your mind and prepare yourself. This is something dramatic. You know, you don't just walk into Yerushalayim. My first time in Yerushalayim was January 1969, a year and a half after the Six-Day War. And we came on, and my parents took us on a not religious tour. And we're on a bus, and we were going up the Yerushalayim Highway, Bab El Wad, and it's not like it is today, where it's already pretty wide, and they're widening it more. It was mamish one little lane, back and forth, until he got there, and he stops. Stops the bus, pulls over to whatever there was the side of the road, and he says, Jews don't ride into Yerushalayim, they walk. And we all got out and we walked into Yerushalayim. That was my first time I ever came to Yerushalayim. It stays with me to this day. Every time I come into Yerushalayim, you're coming into Yerushalayim. This is something special, you know? How could it be that this city, which was so honest and so good, and all the time of the Chachamim and the Sanhedrin, how could it be they're cheating, they're lying, they're stealing, they're bribing? How could this be, asks Yishayahu. By the way, nobody answers his questions. Yirmiyahu doesn't answer his question. Yishayahu doesn't answer his question. And the third Eicha is the Eicha of Moshe Rabbeinu, which again we'll lay next Shabbos. Eicha esol levadi, how can I carry by myself tochachem umasachem verivchem all your problems and your arguments and your fights? Let's find people and let's make court system. That's the Eicha. Yeshua says, how could it be that Yerushalayim has turned into robbers and thieves, murderers? Yirmiyahu says, how could it be Yerushalayim was destroyed? Moshe Rabbeinu says, how could I handle this myself? Let's set up a court system. And that's the first Eicha. Now, Vaistas, you could say, each one comes out of the one before. How could it be that Yerushalayim is desolate? Because Yerushalayim lost its Kedusha. It turned into a place of murderers and thieves and dishonest people. And cruel thieves and terrible things. That's how it happened. And what's Yishayahu's question? How could it happen that Yerushalayim could come that way? Says Moshe Rabbeinu, how can I handle everything myself? Let's set up a court system. Oh, why is that such a bad thing? And the people say, it's a good idea. Says Rashi, you answered me this question for your own benefit. You should have answered, Rabbeinu Moshe. Mimi na elumod, mimcha u mitalmidecha. Who would it be better to learn from, you or your talmidim? Lo mimcha shenitzta'arta aleha? Wouldn't we rather hear it from you because you suffered for this Torah? Ella what? It's too much of a bother. Yeah, I'm gonna wait in line. Or Sameach has this Ask the Rabbi service, email service. And they said, this was years ago, they were starting to get these shailas from people who were writing in questions. And it was clear from the question they were dealing with it from a person. And they wrote them back and said, why don't you ask a Rav? There are none. There are no Rabbanim. And they wrote back, there's no Rabbanim in Brooklyn? Stama, should be a few. Open up one of the guides, it's like hundreds of names. Yeah, but they're all too busy. It takes too long. I can't be bothered. It's too hard. You know how Yerushalayim fell apart? You know how it turned into such a bad place that it ended up being destroyed? Only one reason. We couldn't be bothered anymore. It was too hard. I'm not saying here, but there are yeshivas where a guy goes into shir, you know, and he assumes the stance, you know, leans back in the chair, spreads out his legs. Go ahead, Rebbe. I'm listening. You know what I'm saying? When I was in Chavetz Chaim, they only had tables, they didn't have shtenders. Okay, Stam, they're not yeshivish, but they, you know, it was a shita. Like everything in Chavetz Chaim was a shita, you know. The yeshiva said, when you have a shtender, you can just lean back and pull it to you. When you have a table, you have to lean forward. To lean forward. Somebody used to go to Chaim Berlin to hear a shir, Rav Hutna. It was a small room. It was hot. When he spoke, it was hard to hear him. And week after week. And so somebody said, who's going to the shir, why don't we move to the, you know, there's an auditorium there. Give the Rav a microphone, you know, and we'll have to hear everybody comfortable. He says, because that's not the way you learn Torah, Rav Hutna says. You have to work at it. Why would you work at it? Because you care. I don't know if anybody here plays basketball. We play basketball. And you could see kids out in the heat on the asphalt. You know what I mean? Practicing their layups over and over again, over and over again, until they get good at it. You know why? Because it's important to them. I met a guy who was a concert flutist. I asked him, how come he never plays the flute? He says, because if you don't have 8 hours a day to practice, it's not worthwhile. 8 hours a day to practice the flute? Because it's important. I'm not choshed anybody here because, you know, of course, in this yeshiva, we don't have, you know, any of those, you know, technological devices, you know, but you know, you ever see people who have no problem spending hours trying to win a board on Candy Crush? My daughter told me there was this girl, and her friends say, so what are you up to? And she says, I disconnected. I got rid of my Twitter. I got rid of my email. I got rid of my Facebook. You know, I got rid of everything. So he says, oh my gosh, what do you do now? She says, what do you mean? Now I have a life. She says, can I use it in Candy Crush? What else do you need a life for? And when you lose, what does it say? You're out of lives. That's truer than we realize. Talk about a Musa Haskell, you understand? Why? Because it's exciting. But when it comes to Torah and your Shemayim and being a Yid and all the stuff that goes with that, we don't care that much. And if a Jew lacks that passion and you don't care, and that's what Moshe Rabbeinu said, don't you want to hear from me? No, not really. Is there somebody I can get to faster? Easier? That's what I really want. You know? It was a Cracker Jacks commercial. They still have Cracker Jacks in America? Yeah. This was in the 1970s, I think. Jack Gifford. And they had a jingle. My parents, both of them worked day and night, so they used to just sit me in front of a television. That was my chinuch. You know, I have people who rattle off Mishnayos Baal Peh, you know, and I can rattle off jingles from the 1970s, you know. What do you want when you gotta eat something? And it's gotta be sweet, and it's gotta be a lot, and you gotta have it now. Well, that just says everything right there. It's gotta be sweet, and it's gotta be a lot, and I gotta have it now. Now. Sometimes you hear a kid saying, there's nothing to eat. The refrigerator is full. There's nothing to eat. So why don't you make yourself some microwave popcorn? It takes too long. When I was a kid, you took a frying pan and you put oil in it and you put it in and you tried to make sure it didn't bounce all over the place as you cooked it. Until they came out with Jiffy Pop. This was a little pan with already had foil on top of it, so it expanded. And it took you a nice long time to fry all that stuff. Now you stick it in the microwave for, I think, 3 minutes. Takes too much time. Can't be bothered. You know? And that's the problem. You know, they did a survey. They said, would you say the two biggest problems afflicting the Jewish people today are ignorance and apathy? And the number one answer was, I don't know and I don't care. That's the problem. People ask me, what do you do when someone just doesn't care? They just don't care. When I started in Kyiv back in the early 80s, late 70s, early 80s, so there were people who were searching for the truth. And they'd say, you know, if you can prove to me this is true, then I'll do it. So by the time they hit the 90s, people were saying, if I could prove to you this is true, would you keep it? No. Okay, so it's true. So what? Yeah? Usher Wade, he used to be a Baptist minister. Baruch Hashem, he more or less keeps his Jewish accent. I only one time heard him really lose it. He was in a question and answer, and somebody at the time, this is obviously back in the 1990s, the archbishop, there was an archbishop in France who was actually a Jew in the Holocaust, had been put in a convent, and became a Christian, worked his way up to archbishop, and he was one of the people being considered for the Pope. So he says, I understand there's an archbishop who's really Jewish. He says, yeah, it's true. He says, why didn't, you know, he's in line to become the Pope. He says, that's right. He says, well, why doesn't somebody explain to him that Judaism is really true? And that he shouldn't be doing this. And he lost it. And he switched back into his Baptist preacher mode, you know. Are you kidding me? This man is in line to become one of the most powerful people in the world. To run the lives of billions of people and control billions of dollars. And you want him to give that up for something like the truth? What a powerful idea. So if people don't care, what are you going to do? What are you doing? Someone doesn't care. And you try to talk to somebody, and you see their life drifting away, or you see them get involved in something really bad, and they just don't care. What do? Nothing. That's the 3 weeks. The 3 weeks start off, and we know it's Shavuos B'Tammuz, and we know that the Churban is coming, and we go through the 3 weeks, and we go into the 9 days, and we go to Shavuos Chalbo, and we come into Erev Tisha B'Av, and Tisha B'Av... And we sit on the floor again. Well, a number of years, I used to do a Tisha B'Av program with Kinnis here. And this base manager. And people would come to me afterwards and say, thank you so much. That was the best Tisha B'Av I ever had. That's not the worst part. I can't wait till next year. So... what do? Nebuch. You got to wait till HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes it so bad that we don't want it anymore. That's what happened in Amalek. When Amalek comes and attack, and we call it, Rashi says, and we start screaming out, Tata, Tata. That's what happened in Purim. What's it going to take? We start to care. And if we don't care, and we're not excited about it, which is the Eicha of Moshe Rabbeinu, Then we end up with the Eicha of Yeshayahu, where Klal Yisrael is falling apart. I was in a Beis Medrash somewhere. I won't mention where, because I've said this too many times. I give too many details, people figure it out. Somewhere. I was there after Shabbos Mincha, and three people are sitting around the Aron. It was closer to the Bima, closer to the Aron than this is. And they were sitting around, and they're schmoozing. I was sitting and learning. But what can I tell you? Their conversation was just, you know, so fascinating. Even though I was doing Saita, which is a great Gemara. Yeah? And this one guy says, I leased the car. And you're entitled to X number of miles. And if you go over, you have to pay $1 for every mile. And my lease was up, and I was 200 miles over. That was $200. So I didn't want to have to pay the $200. And the other two guys like, no, of course you don't pay it. So I found this Israeli guy who would turn back the odometer for you for $50. So I bring it to him, and he starts turning back the odometer, and the odometer breaks. So the guy says, don't worry. It happens sometimes. I work with another person, not Jewish. And they will steal from another car, similar to yours, their odometer. And I'll install it. And he moved it up to whatever the miles should be. He says, and I saved myself $150. And everyone goes to him, shkayach, shkayach. You know, brilliant. And I'm saying to myself, you know, we used to die for this stuff. He used to a Jew to give up what he believed in. They would give up their life. And now you can buy a Jew for $200? So I happened to be in Woodburn. And I told the story over to Moro, who runs the Sfarim store in Woodburn. And he says to me, $200? I can buy a Jew for less than that. He says, people come in here, it's a Sfarim store. They buy Sfarim. At the end, I charge them sales tax. And they get very upset at me. He says, I'm sorry. I didn't realize. You must have a different Pesach. Who's your Pesach? Because Reb Moshe Feinstein says you have to pay the sales tax. And the Satmar Rov says you have to pay the sales tax. So who's your Pesach? Forget. He says, then they start to get angry at me. And I said, oh, I didn't understand. You don't believe in the Eibishter. No, when you're buying Svarim, you don't want to hear you don't believe in the Then I get very upset. Well, what do you mean? He says, you think you have to steal this 8% sales tax or you won't have a parnosa? Kadosh Baruch Hu won't be able to take care of you. You won't be able to feed your family. Because there's no God in the world, and unless you steal the money, you won't have it. It was Pesach Kron tells a great story. I heard it on one of his tapes. This guy is going to Beth Israel Hospital. He has to go through the Brooklyn Battery Tunnel in the morning. You know, if you come from Brooklyn, you understand, there are people still there from a week ago. They haven't gotten through the tunnel. You know? And he's waiting. He doesn't know what to do. It's backed up. His wife, the contractions are coming, getting closer, you know. So he gets into the bus lane, and he zooms through, and he runs through the toll. A cop pulls him over. He says, my wife's in labor. He goes, why didn't you tell us? We would have gotten you an escort. And they bring him off to the hospital. And he's with his wife. They have the baby. And he comes back that night. And this is back in the old days when there used to be tokens. So he goes up to one of the toll guys. And he gives him two tokens. The guy says, what's this? He says, this morning I was coming through. And he goes, oh, congratulations. What did your wife have? He says, how'd you know? He says, we saw the cops pull you over. And afterwards we asked what happened. And he said, this guy was going to have a baby. And he says, well, if he's an Orthodox Jew, he'll definitely come back to pay the token. And we were just waiting to see. So I told that story over at Pesach Kron. I said, you remember the story? He says, sure. I said, let me tell you a different story. And I told him my story with the $200. I said, what happened? It was a Tisha B'Av morning. I heard Rabbi Kaufman from Waterbury. He said something that was so powerful. He said, my parents may not have been as halachic observant as many people are today, but they had something we don't have. They were proud Jews. They knew that's for the goyim. Yidden don't do that. Today people are very careful with halacha, but they're not Jews. And that's what Yeshayahu saw. You know what causes the churban? That we've sacrificed and sold out on everything that we believe in. That you can buy a Jew for $200 or 8% sales tax. You know why that happens? Because we just don't care anymore. I had a guy in yeshiva once when I was a mashgiach during a particularly dark period of my life. And this guy couldn't get up in the morning. He just couldn't get up in the morning. He used to say to me, Rebbe, I wish I could. I just can't. I push it, can't. I don't know. First day of Be'er Hazmanim, 7 o'clock in the morning, he was all dressed walking out of the building. It was a miraculous recovery. Because that he wanted to do. We have time for the things we want to do. Spending 8 hours a day on a flute, or trying to beat a board on a game, you know, or practicing a layup, or whatever it is. If it's important to us, we invest. And when it comes to something that's important, that exists our entire life, and everyone will tell you, what's the most important thing in my life? Torah. Is it true? It's like the father who tells people, the most important thing in my life are my kids. Do you spend any time with them? No, I'm busy working. Why? To make money for my kids. Who I never see. You know. I heard a father say to his kids once, you know, they said, Dad, we never see you. He said, don't worry, when I die, you'll have a big yerusha. That's beautiful. Isn't that beautiful? The word is eicha. How could it be? There's so many times you look at people and say, how could it be? Sometimes I had talmidim, and they'd say to me, you know, don't worry, Rebbe, I know what I'm doing. I said, I also know what you're doing. That's the problem. I said, don't worry, I know what I'm doing. I'm okay. Eicha! How could it be? How could it be? That's the question we have to ask ourselves. Because there are people who turn around and look at their lives at some point in their life and they ask the question, Eicha, how could it be? How did my life become a korban? And the answer is because I sold out. Why did I sell out? Because I didn't care enough about the things that were important. That's the whole time of year we're in, and that's really the whole Be'er Hazmanim. And then we blow shofar and we say to everybody, okay, now it's time to wake up and rebuild your life. But there's an important principle. Whatever you don't lose, you gained. Or those of us who are serial dieters, you know, whatever you lost, you don't gain back. You know, you have people going on a diet, and then they go off their diet. When they go off their diet, they feel like they have to eat everything that they missed. They plan out a route. First they go to all the milchigs, then they go to all the fleishigs, you know, they come around, you know. And if it's Chas V'Shalom, they broke on a Tuesday, everyone knows you can't start a diet until Sunday because it's already into Shabbos and it's not covered Shabbos. You know what I mean? And slowly, and I tell people, whatever you don't gain back, you've lost. You know? And whatever you know, I don't know how much you did this year. What Mamsechti you did? Kiddushin. You finished it? Yeah. Try seriously doing a Chazar. Starting today. You'll be surprised how little you remember. I watch guys loading in Gerardo. How's we cover? Did we do this, Tysus? I got something written on the side. Oh, Rabbi Kivager. Oh, yeah, Taki, there was a whole thing with this. Anyway. This doesn't look familiar. Did I do this? And we pick it up and we let it go. We pick it up and we let it go. You know? I was in camp, sleepaway camp. I don't know if they still have sleepaway camps. I was in sleepaway camp. So it used to be, the end would be color war. And they would have the sing. They'd sing, and they'd bring all the kids together, and they'd scream at them to make sure that they could sit up without scratching their chairs. That was the most important part of the sing. So if you got up, you scratched your chairs, then you lost points right away. So everyone had to stand up. And we just practice this over and over again, just standing up until you heard nothing. And I was like, ooh. And they'd practice the songs, and you'd practice it until it was just perfect. You get up there and you'd sing, and you're going to win points. In life, you get more points. So how much is it worth? How much am I willing to practice? How much am I willing to invest? How excited am I? And let's be perfectly honest, if I'm not, then I have to figure out why. And I have to work on it. And I have to address it. Because I heard a shmooze from Moshe Chait, whose yahrzeit is today, the Rosh Yeshiva of Chofetz Chaim in Israel. And he gave a shmooze, and he says, Edom, they can marry into Klal Yisrael after 3 daros. Why? Because they came out to kill you with the sword. Ammon and Moab can never marry in. You know why? Because they didn't come to greet you with bread and water. So he says, which would you rather? They don't come with bread and water, or they don't come with a sword? He says, a guy who comes at you with a sword, at least he cares. A guy who doesn't come to you with anything, he just doesn't care. And if you're apathetic, you can't become a Jew. I remember those words, I heard them in 1975. I heard that shmuz. It stays with me to this day. You can't be a Jew and be apathetic. A person has to stand up and say, I care. And if we don't, then what does Kodesh Baruch Hu have to do to make us care? What's going to happen that we wake up and we say, this is important to me? HaKadosh Baruch Hu showers us with brachas. And if those brachas motivate us to go off and become good people, then we'll just get more brachas. But if the only thing that motivates us are bad times, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu will send us the bad times to motivate us so that we care. But he doesn't want us to just sit by and let life pass you by. Because if you care, then you'll be honest, and then you'll have a Yerushalayim. Mirtz Hashem.